From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, July 9th. Coming up, we'll learn about a new investigation by the Marshall Project that found over 100 cases of survivors who were punished for a crime committed by their abusers. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Champaign is expected to see heavy rainfall and windy weather tonight as the remnants of Hurricane Beryl make their way to Indianapolis. IPM's May Antar reports.
The weakened storm is still predicted to bring around 3 inches of rain Tuesday night. State climatologist Trent Ford says some areas may flood into Wednesday morning.
Just turn around, don't drown. If you cannot tell how deep the water is, then don't drive through it, no matter how big your vehicle is. It doesn't take more than a couple feet of water to sweep even a very large vehicle off the road.
Ford did say that because Champaign has been a bit drier, the soil will likely soak up a lot of the rainfall. He says that will help some farmers who had crops at risk. May Antar, IPM News.
The public will have a chance to weigh in on the future of Metra, PACE, and the CTA in Chicago at a series of hearings starting today. Alex Degman reports.
State Senator Ron Villevollum is among a number of voices calling for the Chicago area transit agencies to merge into one entity. They face a looming fiscal cliff in 2026, COVID federal relief money runs out, and ridership levels still haven't rebounded to pre-pandemic levels. The Chicago Democrat says the public should have a say in crafting a transit system that, quote, works for our people. The CTA specifically has faced mounting criticism over reliability and safety concerns in the last few years. There are 5 meetings scheduled in the Chicago area between today and September. Today's is at the Blandick Building downtown. A 6th meeting, scheduled for October, will be held in Springfield. I'm Alex Degman.
Steve Serio, one of the most prominent figures in wheelchair basketball, will compete in the Paralympic Games this summer for the 5th and final time. Serio first played in the Paralympics in 2008 while a member of the University of Illinois' wheelchair basketball team. Serio, who was paralyzed during removal of a spinal tumor as an infant, tells the 21st show that he does not play just to win.
The success of the Paralympic Games has translated to more people with disabilities finding adaptive sports, having that moment that transforms and opens up their lives and not only shows them that they can expect more from this life, but they can demand more from it.
Serio helped the USA wheelchair basketball team win gold medals in the 2016 and 2020 Paralympic Games. At age 36, he hopes his team can win a 3rd gold medal at the Paris Paralympic Games, which will start August 28th, following the Olympics. On Saturday, July 13th, Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Chamber Orchestra will anchor a music festival in Champaign's Hessel Park. Patrick Singer is co-director of the Iliac Festival, named for the first piece of music composed by computers that was developed at the University of Illinois.
Sinfonia de Camera is comprised of University of Illinois faculty, staff, and students. And you know, it's been founded, it was founded in 1984, so they've been performing for quite some time. This is their 41st season, or they kick off their 41st season this fall, and so this is a unique opportunity to see them outside of that.
This professional chamber orchestra is led by world-renowned pianist, conductor, and educator Maestro Ian Hobson. It will play pieces by Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, among others. Still to come, we'll learn about a new investigation by the Marshall Project that found over 100 cases of survivors who were punished for a crime committed by their abusers. That story is coming up next on 217 Today.
Next time on the 21st Show, John Deere is the world's top seller of farm equipment. But the company, based in Moline, Illinois, is laying off hundreds of workers. We'll talk about what's behind the move. Plus, researchers at SIU have found a way to turn waste plastics into food. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on the 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. A new investigation by the Marshall Project found over 100 cases of survivors who were punished for a crime committed by their abusers. The cases the Marshall Project found in Illinois involve a little-known law called the Theory of Accountability. It allows a person to be prosecuted for another person's crime if they assisted or helped, even, in some cases, if that help was provided only under threat of violence. The Marshall Project's Shannon Heffernan explains, a warning to listeners, this story includes descriptions of violence.
When Patricia Johnson met Ray Travieso, she was only 17. He was 35. But she came from a poor family, and he made sure she had what she needed. Stable housing, medicine for her mom. Once he gave Johnson a beautiful pair of earrings, gold and dangly. They were a symbol of his ability to provide for her. But one day, in the parking lot of a Sizzler restaurant, the meaning of those earrings changed. Johnson offhandedly complimented another man's car, and Travieso got mad at her for giving him attention.
So when we got out of the car, he knocked me down. He hit me so hard, the earring flew out of my ear, and I was trying to look for it. But I wasn't really looking for the earring. I was so embarrassed, I didn't want to go into the Sizzlers.
After that day, she said the abuse escalated. A shattered glass table, a belt buckle to the face. Johnson's niece, Tremika Turner Mason, was just a kid. She remembers how her Aunt Patricia seemed so young and lively. Johnson took them to the beach and brought them junk food.
Love to go to Dunkin' Donuts. Oh my goodness, that was like our thing. I got like obsessed with jelly donuts.
But eventually, as Johnson was with Travieso, those outings turned to sour.
This particular day, I was like, oh, I really want to go to Dunkin' Donuts. So she was like, yeah, we can go. So we went to Dunkin' Donuts. We went back to her house, and Ray got there, and he was angry that day.
Angry because Johnson wasn't home when he called. Turner Mason could hear him beating her in the next room.
I had already started eating my jelly donut, and I just threw up.
To this day, Turner Mason doesn't eat jelly donuts. Johnson says Travieso had incredible power over her life, monitored her so closely that fearing him was almost like fearing God. On the afternoon of January 16th, 1992, 7 years after they met, Travieso asked Johnson to come with him to take care of some business. He drove her to the house of his business partner, Juan Hernandez. They went to his living room where Hernandez's wife, Olga, was sitting with their baby, Evelyn, on her lap. The two men started arguing about cash. Then there was a knock at the door, and Travieso pulled out a gun.
There was some type of delivery, and I think it was a pizza man. And he told me exactly to say, the order's been canceled. Say it now. And I said, the orders was canceled. The order was canceled. And he said, sit down. And I seen a lamp over in the corner, and I thought about picking it up. And I said to myself, if I pick up that lamp and hit him and he doesn't fall, he's going to kill me. I pondered on that lamp, and I pondered on that lamp.
Medical examiner's reports show what happened. The parents were beaten and their throats were slashed. The baby was bashed to death. Johnson says after Travieso killed them, he told her to gather up jewelry and put it in a bag.
And he looked at me, and he said, you're going to take this to your grave with you, right? I said, you know, I won't say anything.
Travieso did not kill Johnson that day. But in a way, he still took her life. Since 1993, she has been sitting in a prison for those murders. She's serving a life sentence, just like Travieso. Prosecutors didn't have to prove Johnson laid a finger on anyone to send her to prison. Because of Illinois' theory of accountability, Johnson was guilty if she assisted Travieso, even under duress. I tracked down one of the jurors in the case, who asked not to be named out of fear for retaliation from Travieso. Watching the trial, two things were clear to this juror. One, Johnson was there at the murders and provided at least some support. And two, Johnson would have never done anything like that if not for Travieso and his control over her.
There was more than three victims. Of course, the family was victimized. But she was a victim, too.
Still, the juror felt like she had to follow the law. And ultimately, the jury came back with a guilty verdict. She remembers crying with the other jurors.
And it was very difficult to reach the consensus we had, and it was difficult to be forced to follow those rules.
Travieso has changed his story over time about what happened, at one point directly implicating Johnson in some of the murders. But when I wrote him in prison to ask him about it, his answer was short. He said Johnson, quote, should have never been in prison. All these years, I felt bad about it all. I found nearly 100 cases like Johnson's across the country, where a person, almost always a woman, was incarcerated for assisting, supporting, or failing to stop a crime of their abuser. The survivors often had clear signs of abuse at the time they were arrested. One Illinois woman was in a neck brace. Some Illinois lawmakers and activists have tried to change the theory of accountability so people are not punished the same way as the person who actually committed the act. At a hearing last year, State Representative Will Guzzardi spoke in support of a bill that would narrow the law.
We can't hold people legally responsible for the actions of everybody around them that they couldn't possibly have any foreknowledge of.
Another Democrat, Dave Vella, pushed against it.
You're accountable for the people you do nasty things with. And if something bad happens, you should be accountable for the bad act.
The law failed to pass, but activists say they are still pushing for change. Since the conviction, Johnson has come out as a trans man. He still uses she, her pronouns when discussing his past life and asks that we do the same because he says living as a woman was central to the abusive dynamic with Travieso. Johnson is now 55 years old and has spent more than half his life behind bars. Prison can be hard on a body. His teeth are in bad shape and he sometimes uses a cane. But he says he no longer fears Ray Travieso, no longer thinks he's as powerful and omniscient as God. Instead, he prays constantly, on calls with his family, with women who come to his cell for help, with his lawyer during meetings, and at the end of our interview. Johnson says he owes it to God to be brave. I'm Shannon Heffernan from The Marshall Project.
This story was produced in partnership with The Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization focused on the U.S. criminal justice system. And finally, in your forecast for today, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high near 77 degrees. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by May Anthar, Alex Degman, Alyssa Eaton, and Shannon Heffernan. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.